This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, it's always good to, come in behind Patrick Creighton. He was here. He had a lot more to say. I don't think he wanted to end his show.
I know. I didn't want him to end it. And you gave me a scare.
Well, he just...
It was almost the blank and the gloss.
There's
that
a
was
lot
not
of wisdom.
Good.
He didn't want to end the show. He didn't want to leave the studio. So I just sent him off to Cleveland because that's where people go...
To lose their jobs.
To lose their jobs.
You know what? I have Terry Francona better get out of Dodge.
Terry Francona is the last man standing.
He is the last man standing.
So if you have not heard, the Cavaliers have fired their coach, Tyronn Lue. And there's been a house cleaning there in Cleveland with the Browns. I mean, that's it, right? I mean, Hugh
First
Jackson.
First head coach, Hugh Jackson, then their offensive coordinator, Todd Haley.
But I turn to the gloss and I note that you wondered why they didn't take care of the Jackson problem before the season. I mean, you were ready to have Hugh Jackson go, right?
Well, gosh, I don't know. If I'm an owner or a GM and I'm looking at a 1-32 record over two seasons, I'm not sure I'm hanging on to my guy.
And yet they did.
And they doubled their win total this season. They've already won two.
Right. So they were off to a better start.
So
they're a better team.
Figure. They're on fire now.
Well, I don't know about that.
Two wins.
Todd Haley also being let go today from the Cleveland Browns. So he was their offensive coordinator. He was the guy who was going to develop Baker Mayfield.
And brought in by Hugh Jackson.
Oh, goodness. I mean, you think about this 1-2 punch, Jackson and Haley going, Baker Mayfield needing to develop. This is a tough day for the Browns and for especially Baker Mayfield.
Well, you know what John Dorsey is saying? I cannot have dissension in the ranks to develop my quarterback. And if the head coach and the OC are having issues, my franchise is going to suffer. So I got to clean out house and start from the beginning. Yikes.
Well, that they will. And who will be the next head coach is a fascinating question. We'll come back to that, which is interesting. I mean, the biggest rumor out there that's sort of a hot and sexy story is Lincoln Riley of Oklahoma.
But he says he's not ready for
the NFL. He says he's not ready.
He's not going.
But if not now, when? I mean, let's face it.
Bob Stoops was at Oklahoma, and he's sitting at home.
That's true. And he was Mayfield's coach prior. Well, all speculation at this point. When we come back, we're going to take a look at that extraordinary World Series, and we're going to ask the gloss, among other things, where Manny Machado might land next year. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
The holidays are quickly approaching. Don't wait until the last minute to get a gift. Head over to giftingmap.com today. Giftingmap.com. This is the Boss. This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
So I will say that series between the Red Sox and the Dodgers, although not long and not one of these epic seven-game type series, was really unique and special. There were so many narratives in it. And the top of the list for me is the David Price story. As a guy who's lived up
in the redemption story.
The redemption story. I mean, as a guy who's lived up in the Boston area before and a guy who is, I've seen the Boston fans and the Boston media just crush a big contract guy like a Carl Crawford. To see David Price come from being buried in Boston to being now the king of Boston is a turnaround like none other.
Well, the mental resolve that he has.
Yep.
And I looked not even to, I mean, the whole series, we could name so many things that happened. But last night, to give up a home run to David Freese right out of the chute.
Yep.
Was just, and he was steely nerved. I mean, his expression didn't change. But if you don't have the mental resolve that he does and that just will to power through that, you're done. You are done. And that was his only hiccup on the evening.
Well, because one thing just to note, I mean, in Boston now, he will never pay for his own meal. He will be a king. I mean, it is great to be a hero in Boston. It's great to be beloved in Boston. But the inverse of that is pretty darn ugly, and he's dealt with the ugly for a long time.
Right, he's been on both sides of both sides of the extreme. And you know, last night in the on the on-field celebration, they passed out the T-shirts and all. They were interviewing somebody, and you could see David Price in the background, and he was alone, and he had his T-shirt just covering his eyes, and he was crying. And I think it was just such an overwhelming moment that the demons have been exercised.
Redemption is the right word. It's just amazing what happened to him.
But he wasn't the only one. Like, you want to have a last name with a P in Boston. Because,
excuse me?
Yes. Steve Pierce.
Oh, good. Okay, I feel better.
I like Rick Porcello, too. Yes. But, oh, my goodness. That story is incredible. A 36-year-old journeyman who basically came to Boston, was practically given to Boston from Toronto, has played in his major league career on every single team in the American League East, as well as the Astros and other teams. In one season, he played for three different teams. This was his third stint with Boston. I mean, just every year he's with a different team. For him to be the MVP of the series, and he deserved it. There was absolutely not a doubt.
Well, and really, he's a platoon guy who stepped up on the grandest of stage, and the opportunity was there, and he delivered amazingly. You say that, without a doubt, he deserved to be the MVP. There was a piece of me that wanted David Price to get the MVP.
I knew you were thinking that.
I could have seen,
and I don't doubt that.
Yeah, there could have been co-MVPs. Yep. Now, I know they weren't going to do that. There was only one red truck sitting there, right? But to me, David Price, you could say this about several players on the Red Sox in that series. I don't know if they would have won it without Uvalde, too. But really, Price at the pitching, Pierce with his hitting, those two really stood out to me. Look, I was happy for Pierce, but I had a soft spot for David Price to get the MVP.
Well, I think here's why I think the edge went to Pierce, because I agree with you. I think it could have gone either way, and I thought it was either one of the two that got it. I love your "there's only one red track." That's hilarious. But the difference is that Pierce was in every single game, and he did the big, big hits when it mattered. You know, and Price was warming up the last two games.
Yeah, he was always about to get into a game.
Right. And also, the other thing, in last night's game, in the final game five in L.A., after David Freese kicked off the first inning with, you know, a home run to start it, I mean, that just could deflate the Boston sideline. And what does Pierce do? Hits a two-run home run in the count, you know, to counter in the bottom of the first. So that right there was just exactly what was needed. I mean, he was able to switch the momentum. So
he was outstanding.
You know, you can't argue either way, though. I would have been happy if they called David Price the MVP as well.
Right. So on the other side, the Dodgers have to look in the mirror and say, what do we have to do differently? Now, they're not going to have Manny Machado next year.
Maybe.
So he is a free agent, and he could re-sign with the Dodgers. Actually, maybe they need him. I mean, they did trade for him. I think the common perception was that it was a rental. He's certainly going to test the market. He didn't show very well in the series. I mean, the bloom was off the rose a bit. You go back in June, and there was this speculation that Machado and Harper were going to come and have extraordinary paydays in the free agent season. Harper has not done that well. And Machado didn't do well in the series. But we're going to check. Let's pause on that, because we've got the authority on all things Boston sports joining us. The guru himself. We've got the longtime Boston Globe columnist Bob Ryan joining us, and he is the author of a book called Scribe, My Life in Sports. Bob, you're on the air with David and Carla.
Hi, guys.
Bob, glad to have you in.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay, so what's on your mind?
Well, what's on our mind is, how good is it to be a Boston sports fan right now? First of all, congratulations on your series. We're watching the Patriots on their way to a win tonight, we think, and Celtics look poised. But let's talk Red Sox. We just think David Price is the best story of this series, but what stood out to you the most?
He probably was, because the narrative about David Price was so acute and so pervasive, and it was such a story up here that he had never been able to pitch well as a starter in the playoffs. He wasn't the only one, because, you know, they entered the playoffs with their number one, two, and three starters, Sale, Price, and Porcello, all for lifetime as starters in the playoffs. And that's one reason why a lot of us are a little apprehensive about what they would be able to accomplish, despite the fact they won 108 games. They needed to, you know, go do it all over again in the playoffs. And Price stepped up and got it done. And so He certainly deserves all the credit that you can give him. But it was a major departure from what he had done before. But he got it done, and now I think the narrative has changed, and David Price is now a very popular person in Boston.
We're talking to Bob Bryan, longstanding Globe columnist in Boston. So I have to ask you, I mean, the Red Sox, Dombrowski, he had basically seven starters when you include Pomerantz and Wright, who didn't play, and Wright, of course, has had the injury. But he had a lot of depth. Picking up Eovaldi was such a pivotal pickup along the way. Pierce was a great pickup. How much credit do you give Dombrowski for this build versus Cherington, who brought in a lot of the young talent?
Dombrowski had an A-plus season. The guys that he had signed at great expense came through for him, namely Price, obviously, and Martinez, who was also not assigned until February, if you recall. And then during the season, you mentioned Eovaldi, you mentioned Pierce, you have to throw Kinsler in there, who made contributions, guys that they picked up along the way that made very significant contributions. So Dave Dombrowski was worth every penny that the ownership gave him. He has run this team very well. He utilized a farm system handed over to him by Ben Cherington and Theo Epstein to obtain Sale, traded two guys to Chicago for that. A lot of people felt that was a risky move. It wasn't at all. It was a great move. And then the guys he picked up, his scouts or whoever advised that, or whether he knew what he knew himself about Eovaldi, and that he was the guy that he would want. And Pierce, who now has played on all five teams in the American League East, Dombrowski gets a 4 stars, gold star, whatever, however you want to phrase it.
We're talking to Bob Bryan, longstanding Globe columnist. So the Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez did not have great series. Could you ever envision the lineup would have been so explosive without those two?
Not necessarily. I think we expected. Now, Mookie's first two playoff appearances weren't that great either.
Yep.
Nor was Bogarts Benintendi a little bit. So it was the other guys that came through as much. Obviously, Pierce has become the MVP. A pinch hit home run by Nunez, 3-run homer. A pinch hit home 3-run home run by Mitch Moreland. Another pickup from a year before of Dombrowski, both of them. So, you got to give them credit for those two guys too. So, yes, they did it despite not getting major contributions from the killer bees out in the outfield with the best defensive, except for Bradley, of course, who had come through in the other series with big hits and was the MVP of the ALCS. So all in all, he doesn't get credit for that. Bradley was signed by the previous administration. All three of those guys were, as a matter of fact. They were drafted. They were all drafted guys from the Ben Cherington administration. So it's a combination. It's always a combination. When they won in 04, I remember looking out of the field when they beat the Cardinals in 04, and you had three guys from Luke Gorman, you had three guys from Dan Duquette, and you had three guys from Theo Epstein. I mean, how great was that? So that's what you need. In this case, it was a combination of Cherington and Dombrowski.
So Craig Kimbrell, the closer, struggled. He was sort of rocky in the postseason. What's his future look like next year?
Dubious. Frankly, I think that they are really not. I wonder if they're going to be willing to invest a great deal of money in him based on the way he faltered in September and in the playoffs. Maybe they can develop Joe Kelly into that guy. Joe Kelly, you saw what he could do in the playoffs. We waited, and the Cardinals waited, and the Red Sox waited as well. They sweated through a lot of down moments with Joe Kelly trying to get the ball over the plate. But what you saw in the postseason was what both the Cardinals and the Red Sox had always envisioned for him. And maybe at age 30, he can become that guy. They've won four different World Series now and since 2004, and everyone with a different closer. Closers don't have great shelf lives unless your name is Rivera, as a rule. And so you're always able to go out there and find a closer. I don't think they're going to invest a lot of money in Kimbrel. I may be wrong.
Yeah, I'm not sure anybody will at this point.
No, that was discouraging, although they claimed that they found out that he was tipping his pitches and that was the answer. But then when the biggest game came, the moment of the year to clinch, they did not turn to their official closer. They turned to Chris Sale. And I think that tells you something.
And, Bob, we've talked about, obviously the MVP, David Price, and it also could have been Steve Pierce. What about Alex Cora as the other MVP? I mean, let's talk about his his influence on this Boston Red Sox team? Is it his youth? Is it his ability to really relate to the Hispanic players well? Or is it his, you know, mentorship under A.J. Hinch? What is it that Alex Cora, he should have bought a lottery ticket this week. Every decision he made worked. It was impressive. And I'd love to hear from you. What was it?
All the above. And it's not just his ability to relate to the Hispanic players. Which, of course, is a given and why bilingualism is a very important asset in modern managing or modern sports writing, for that matter. But the fact is that his command of English is not just technically good. We've had other guys who were technically good, such as Pedro and David Ortiz. But this guy is colloquially good. He understands American history and culture. He understands Americans. He went to college at Miami. He gets it. He's a Puerto Rican who came to America and totally embraced American culture. He's a hybrid of both. He's the ideal modern manager, 42 years old, recently removed from playing, understands the modern game, embraces analytics, but is not a slave to analytics. He understands it's a combination, ultimately, between human beings and analytics. He had so many examples this year of where his personal touch was important. They needed a new voice. They got it. John Farrell wasn't a bad person, but he was analytical, a professorial, and a little remote, and it wasn't registering anymore. They needed someone new, and they found that guy. I can tell you this. 10 years ago when he was a player, and this is hardly hyperbole, I was one of many writers who said, there's a manager. It was universal in the assumption that that guy would be a manager someday, and now it's all come to life.
Well, you said it first, Bob. You get the credit.
We're talking to Bob.
He deserves a tremendous amount of credit. They could not have done it with a different voice. There may be other guys out there, and plus what he learned from A.J. Hinch last year, mm-hmm. sitting at the right hand of that father and absorbing how he manipulated the bullpen, how he absorbed that information to go along with what he already knew. He was totally ready to do the job, and he got the job done.
Bob Bryan joining us here on ESPN Nation Radio. About a minute left. Is this Red Sox team one of the best ever for the Red Sox? I mean, 2004 has all emotional value, but this team has won many more games.
The team to compare them to is not 2004, it's 2012. Yep. That's the previous best team in Red Sox history. The team was 105-47, the best winning percentage in Red Sox history. Won an 8-game World Series against the Giants, a great World Series when it was best of nine, there was a tie. That's the benchmark, not 04. And they're up there with anybody in the Red Sox history, winning 119 games, beating three terrific teams in the playoffs, beating two 100-win teams, beating the Dodgers, only losing a game per series. This is the best achievement in Red Sox history, no question. Hey, if 2012 had to play three series, maybe they would have done it. We'll never know. All I know is that in the modern era, this team is number one.
Awesome stuff. That's Bob Bryan. Bob, thanks so much for joining the Boston Gloss ESPN Nation Radio.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Yes, so it's going to be a tough offseason for the Dodgers.
Again.
Kershaw's got a big decision looming.
Yeah, he's got to know by Wednesday if he's going to do his opt-out clause. He's going to stay with the Dodgers.
Well, he makes a ton of money.
Yes, exactly.
He's playing in La La Land. He's on a good team. There's only one problem. He can't win in the postseason.
I mean, I know the past 3 years he's been hampered by injuries,
right.
No doubt about it, and that's tough. But from April to September, he's who you want on the mound. And then in October, oof, you want to forget. I mean, his ERA in this series was something like 7.5.
Right.
That's dismal.
No, that's tough. Dave Roberts, also manager of the Dodgers, he's also been criticized a great deal for the decisions he made down the stretch. Notably, he got a tweet from the president. In fact, that's the first time I can remember that the president has weighed in on a coaching decision. Maybe Dave Roberts should feel flattered or filled with regret, but he got the attention of the president.
Rich Hill did not like that. He tweeted right back to Trump. So here we go. That was an odd thing, though. It's like, what happened on the Hill with Hill? That was very strange.
The conversation isn't really that complex, right? It would be as if I walked in here now, I looked at you, there you are with your headset on, and I came into the room, and if you took your headset off, I wouldn't necessarily think that you were going to walk off. Maybe you are. But when the ball was placed in his hand, he thought that was it. He'll want it off the field, which was the conclusion. It's just a strange miscommunication. It's not that hard to say, how are you feeling? Do you think you got more gas, or is it time to take you out?
You know, and it also actually, with the explanation afterwards, which of course the media was all over Dave Roberts and Rich Hill to figure out what happened there, because he was absolutely on fire and gave no reason that he was slowing down. When Dave Roberts says, he says, keep an eye on me, then Rich Hill is having to say, I don't quit on my team. This is the World Series. So it actually causes some underlying tension that really wasn't there.
Right.
You know, Rich Hill is saying, when your manager comes out to the mound and, you know, it puts his hand out of respect, I give him the ball. That's what it is. And then Dave Roberts is saying, when he says, keep an eye on me, I assumed he wanted to go out. Well, stop assuming, because we know what that does, right?
Right.
Jeez,
crazy.
That is just a cluster of things that did not go the Dodgers' way. And then you've got, like we talked with Bob Ryan last segment, the legendary Bob Ryan, is if you're Alex Cora, you better be buying lottery tickets, because every decision you made, from pulling out Nunez, putting in Devers as your, you know, pinch hitter, everything went right. Starting Sale, you know, starting Price, putting in Sale to relief. There wasn't a decision Cora made that went the wrong way.
Well, I was sitting there last night thinking that Alex Cora was making a mistake sending Sale out in the ninth, because what if they need Sale for the next game? Why? You're up by four runs. You don't have to bring in your number one starter to close out the ninth. You do have Craig Kimball, your closer, although he's been rocky. You do have Joe Kelly, who's just pitched an extraordinary eighth inning.
Wow, Joe
Kelly.
Can't
you bring him back and pitch the ninth? But every time Cora made a move, I thought it was going to be the wrong move, and it turned out to be just the right move.
You know, he definitely was a pupil of A.J. Hinch.
Yeah.
That was A.J. Hinch's story last year.
Yep.
You know, and how he ended the series. A.J. Hinch ended Game 7 on Dodger Field by pulling his starter, Charlie Morton, in to close out the game. Do you
yep.
remember that?
Yeah.
It was Morton
yeah.
to McCann
same,
to
same
close
playbook.
It out.
Absolutely.
And it was the same playbook to have Sale closing it out last night.
Right.
It was pretty fine.
So there are interesting guys potentially leaving these teams. I mean, Uvaldi, the pitcher for the Red Sox, great midseason pickup. He was outstanding down the stretch, outstanding in Game 3 of this series in Los Angeles. He's a free agent, and I think he made himself a lot of money in the World Series.
Oh, I think he did, too. I mean, he was in the 18-inning game.
Yep.
And he was basically had his start that night. He was the second nine innings, you know, basically is how that worked. You know, late in that game, you know, into the night, he's pitching 100, 101 miles an hour on a very precise fastball.
Yeah, most of America couldn't keep their eyelids open. It was so late. And he's throwing over 100 miles an hour fastball.
And he didn't look tired. It was really impressive.
So Uvaldi's going to have a payday coming.
His stock went up.
I don't think the Red Sox are going to keep him. They've got too much already invested, and the price tag becomes too rich.
I have a place for him.
You want him in the Astros, don't you?
I want him in the Astros. Yeah.
Well, Astros are likely to lose Dallas Keuchel.
Yes.
So once he goes, they need to replace him with somebody. And, I mean, Uvaldi would be a great pickup.
Uvaldi's from Texas.
Well,
so there should be an advantage there to get him home.
Bring him home.
A little home cooking.
Yeah, and you also have to consider Charlie Morton's also a free agent. And the looming does he or does he not need Tommy John situation with Lance McCullers. So absolutely
I think he does.
Should go after Nathan Uvaldi.
Absolutely. But, you know, do the Red Sox – here's what I say. Red Sox, hey, Houston was really kind to you last year and let you have Alex Cora. Now you could do us a favor, give us a solid, and let us have Uvaldi. We can work that deal out,
that's
right?
That's the deal you want.
Do you like that?
I'm not opposed to that.
Okay, good. Do you think how they're thinking?
Well, really, if you look at the lineup or the starting pitching of the Astros, to lose those three guys, I mean, Morton to free agent, Keuchel to free agent, and McCullers will undergo surgery, those are three guys who are quality starters. They haven't always used them that way, but they're quality starters to
but
lose all
know
three.
We're losing. They don't know they're losing Morton. I pretty much think that Dallas is a done deal.
Yeah, like Morton's a free Keuchel. Agent is the risk, right?
He's a free agent, and he's older, so... Mm-hmm. Even though, if they're able to keep him, they don't want to overpay because they're going to hope that he's going to still be okay at 34 years old.
Charlie Morton on the free agent market, and the Astros have to look at whom they can line up on their starting pitch next year. We'll see.
Whew.
All right, when we come back, we'll be the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
If you don't know what to get your significant other for that special occasion, then head over to giftingmap.com. The team at Gifting Map has curated an amazing collection of great gifts for that special guy or girl in your life. Visit giftingmap.com today.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
Well, it's always fun to sit next to the Monday Night Delight when Monday Night Football is playing. We've got the Patriots and the Bills, and this is a game the Patriots are likely to win by two or three scores.
They've got to be salivating.
Well, this is a good win for them.
Got Derek Anderson under center for the Bills.
That's right, filling in for Josh Allen.
And just passing over Nathan Peterman.
So one, how does that happen?
How does it not happen?
I don't know. How did it take so long to happen? Nathan Peterman has been in the league for a while.
How is he still on a roster? I just want to know, an NFL roster.
Well, one guy who is on an NFL roster, but I'm worried for him, is Josh Gordon. I mean, he's a long, troubled wide receiver who was with the Browns, suspended, had kind of substance abuse issues.
Several times.
And finally, the Browns gave up on him, and Bill Belichick took him under his wing and said, I can fix you. Come here. We're going to put you in the locker next to Tom Brady. And he showed flashes of that great talent. And yet, today he was...
He's not on the first quarter roster today.
Right. So they're sitting him out the first quarter as punishment for being tardy. Not a good thing. Not a great impression for Josh Gordon.
No.
And rumors now, Patriots are looking for a wide receiver because they just can't trust that Gordon is going to be consistent in his performance.
I think that sends a message to Gordon, too, that we're not sitting here waiting for you to get better. I mean, we have zero tolerance for that. So, gosh, I really want him to do well. Because he is a really, I've seen interviews with him. He's a really nice, thoughtful guy who is just lost.
Yeah, likes the substance just a little too much.
Gosh, and just obviously has lacked a lot of discipline in his life in all areas. So I want the best for him, but I think, you know, tomorrow's the trade deadline, midday, so there should be a lot of movement. There's a lot of teams looking for receivers.
Yeah, a lot of teams, including the Texans here in Houston, mm-hmm. from which we broadcast. The Texans lost Will Fuller.
Oh, devastating.
Tore his ACL. This is the speed guy. He's the one who stretches the field and opens things up for Hopkins to catch the mid-range balls, as only Hopkins can do.
And his chemistry with Deshaun Watson is outstanding.
Yes, but they're Fuller's like done. I mean, he's done for this year.
He'll be back for training camp.
Surgery. He'll be back next year. So Texans out looking to fill that void. Eagles would love to pick up a wide receiver. Patriots now perhaps mm-hmm. in the market for a wide receiver. Suddenly wide receiver is the position of choice. Perhaps the Dallas Cowboys were smart to get ahead of the pack
I'll
and pick up Amari Cooper.
Jerry's looking like the smart one in all of this.
Yeah, well, let's not get carried away.
For the moment,
the moment. But a Cooper, a nice addition to that offense. Texans really do need to pick up somebody. There are whispers that Thomas from the Broncos, Demaryius Thomas, might be available. He's not a speedster, but he's certainly a guy with pedigree.
He is, but you know, unfortunately, the Texans' schedule, they see the Broncos on Sunday. So I'll tell you what, Broncos aren't going to be in any mood to give Demaryius Thomas to the Texans.
Right.
Possibly he could go to the Patriots, but there's Pierre Garçon that's going to be available from San Francisco, hopefully.
Right.
That would be a nice pickup.
49ers clearly in sale mode. Mm-hmm. They've got no season this mm-hmm. year. Garçon, I think, is about 32 years old, so his best years are behind him. He would be a good player to sell if you're in sale mode.
Yes, he's, you know, $6.6 million a year somewhere along there. But he's a veteran receiver. And, you know, I like him in a place like Houston. Because they've got these, obviously DeAndre Hopkins is seasoned, but they've got, you know, Jordan Akins and Thomas and Kiki Kute and a young group that could really benefit from a veteran receiver like Garçon.
Now, you mentioned a guy who just doesn't seem to have a name for football. Kiki Kute?
Kute.
I know it's Kiki Kute, but I like Kute.
Kute.
I mean, if you're going to go halfway, go the whole distance.
If you're going to go Garçon, let's go Kute.
Thank you.
Right? What do you think?
Jose, you've got something on this.
I like Kute. It sounds kind of Cajun, doesn't it?
It's a little bit more. Like there's more panache.
Houston's an international city. Let's just give the Texans a little panache.
So to replace Fuller, they need Kiki Kute. But, you know, Kute, he's had hamstring issues. He's had trouble staying on the field.
He's one of the best route runners. Wow.
Well, he's a fourth-round pick of the Texans and a guy who's showed up well this year. And so they'll look hard at whether he can fill that gap. But there's going to be a lot of action. You know, it's really fun to watch the NFL trading deadline as we hit it tomorrow. Tomorrow, the deadline, end of day tomorrow, is that it just wasn't that long ago that there really wasn't much trading activity in the NFL. This whole buyers and sellers was a notion that happened in MLB, but not in the NFL. But we've got a lot of action poised to happen between now and tomorrow.
Exactly. It's exciting.
Now, the other big headlines, of course, in Cleveland, the big change, well, Hugh Jackson's been let go, and we've lost Todd Haley as their offensive coordinator. So lots of changes. It's really surprising to me that Jackson wasn't fired in the offseason, that they waited until now. And there was there were a lot of reasons to
believe.
You don't
think 0-16 is reason for firing? What is wrong? You are harsh.
Why did they bring him back at all? What was the thought
goodness.
There?
I have no idea. You know, maybe it's because, so John Dorsey, this is his first year as a GM in Cleveland.
Yes.
Maybe he didn't want to come in looking like a hatchet man and thought, if we bring in our franchise guy, which they drafted Baker Mayfield just for that purpose,
yep.
You know, this will give Hugh Jackson a chance. But interestingly enough, and in such a Cleveland Brownsy sort of way, Hugh Jackson brings in Todd Haley to help him develop their franchise guy.
Sure.
And the two of them don't see eye to eye. You know, Hugh Jackson says last week, I need to take some of the play calling duties. That cannot sit well with an OC.
Right. It's sort of interesting. These two guys were squabbling. There was an internal feud there. And it's as if the Browns basically said, look, neither of you get to stay. I mean, I'm not going to pick who's right or wrong. You're just both wrong. That's it.
So they do what anyone would do. If you fire both of your offensive guys, you promote the defensive coordinator to be head of everything.
Well, hard to see how that's going to be good for Baker Mayfield. The one thing I can say, the silver lining for the Browns, is when you look at the top three positions, when you look at the quarterback, cornerback, and defensive end pass rushing position, they have rock stars.
Yes, they do.
A little leap of faith that Mayfield's going to become a franchise quarterback, but they've got Mayfield, they've got Myles Garrett, defensive, and then Denzel Ward at corner. I mean, these guys are all poised to really get to the next level if they can get good coaching.
Yeah, terrific, terrific draft by John Dorsey.
Okay, the other big news of the day, well, Jameis Winston has been benched. Fitzmagic has ruled the day.
Oh,
does this surprise anybody here?
No.
I mean, if you really are serious about winning this year.
He threw four interceptions yesterday.
Well, and Winston's history is awful.
It's just terrible. And you know what? This is his fourth year in the league. So right now, he has the most interceptions in the NFL with 10.
Yep.
He's tied with Sam Darnold. Here's the difference. Sam Darnold is a rookie. He's a rookie. This is year four, Jameis Winston.
Right.
This is not surprising. It's frustrating. And it's not going to get any better. And he's in a contract year. So for Tampa Bay, they have to decide this year, are we going to give him the $20 million to keep him? What do you do?
The word is no, no, no. There's no way. So he's going to hit the open market, right? He's a guy who will spill out. They can't commit to him. It's amazing. They took they thought he was the consensus best quarterback of that draft. So they did seemingly the smart thing then. You could have made an argument for Mariota.
Right. Those two were one and two.
Those two were one and two, but they went with Winston. And then you fast forward. Mariota's, the jury's still out on him, but Winston's been a debacle. He will not be renewed. He'll cast out into the market. I guess someone will pick him up as a reclamation project, as a backup quarterback, and see if they can resurrect his career.
Well, you know, it's interesting that we're talking about Cleveland and Tampa Bay back-to-back, because I don't think there's enough talk about kind of the mess that's going on in Tampa Bay when you think about this.
Yep.
So when Jameis Winston was drafted, Lovie Smith was the coach.
Yes.
And after 1 year under Lovie Smith, they fired Lovie so that they could bring in Dirk Koetter to develop Winston. So I've got to say, you know, what role does Dirk Koetter have in Winston's development here?
Right.
Because you look at this now, the number one job of a quarterback is?
Protect the football.
Protect the football. And so you look here, I'm looking at some scary stats that Jameis Winston leads the league in 16 games with, you know, multiple interceptions, which is not a pretty stat to be leading the league. And you know who's second? Blake Bortles.
Ouch.
Ouch.
He's in good company.
He's in, yeah.
Amazing.
He's in pretty
company.
Obvious company, isn't he? So I just think, you know, it shows that it's really important in the development of a quarterback, especially a young quarterback, to get the right coach. So while I don't think Winston's a guy to hang on to it, you know, and not only that, but you also, the coach has to know how to develop the quarterback and get buy-in from your locker room, i.e. Sean McVay. Because look at the night and day we saw from Jared Goff from the first year under Fisher to second year under Sean McVay. You know, also, in fairness, you know, Todd Gurley was injured Jared Goff's rookie year and, you know, came back. So that obviously you see what Gurley is lighting up the NFL right now. So there's a lot of factors in play, but the coach is really important in the development of a quarterback. So I think Tampa Bay is crazy. And when you think about, while Fitzmagic is doing some magic in Tampa Bay and he almost pulled it off yesterday again, think about, and I think of Fitzpatrick as a journeyman who is a competent quarterback, but not anywhere an elite quarterback. And he's making the offense look this good in Tampa Bay. Just think what the offense can look like with a real, consistent, solid, good slash elite quarterback.
Well, it is interesting. It was just about a week ago, I think there were whispers that perhaps Ryan Fitzpatrick would be traded, that he had, the way he had played, he had real value on the market, and he was going to be a backup to Winston, so he could be traded. The whispers he could go to the Jaguars, that he would go elsewhere. But now he's the starter, and Winston's going to get dumped at the end of the year. The interesting thing is you've got, well, there aren't a lot of, I mean, the Jaguars obviously need a quarterback. It's hard to make a midseason trade for a quarterback and envision that quarterback's going to take you anywhere. But Tyrod Taylor is a guy who's out there and perhaps available. Teddy Bridgewater, I think the Saints are happy to keep him.
Oh, yeah.
And so those are, Eli Manning has said, I will not go anywhere, and I'm not sure anybody would want him, but he said that he will exercise his no-trade clause. So the quarterback position is pretty settled as it is with most of these teams. Jaguars are stuck with Bortles. Jaguars with the loss to the Eagles, and they look like they're going nowhere. That team is unraveled quickly.
Yeah, they are going nowhere. That's absolutely a fact. And, you know, they have no one to blame but themselves. They locked Blake Bortles up to a three-year deal last year, and this is what they've got for it.
Well, when you look at the Texans, the AFC South, the Texans out with a 5-3 record. They started 0-3. They've won five straight. They're out in front of their division, and their division includes the Titans, Jaguars, and Colts. I just think this is the division for the Texans to win. I mean, who's going to compete now?
The Colts look better than their record shows.
Yep.
You know, and we have to thank the Colts for, you know, handing a game to the Texans, putting a bow on it with some terrible decision by Frank Reich at the end of that game. So I think that the Colts are going to be the one that could push things along, because Andrew Luck yesterday looked absolutely unbelievable. Now, it was against Oakland, but nonetheless, he threw like crazy. But, you know, the Texans, I love this stat. Under Bill O'Brien, they are 26-1 when leading at the half.
That was an amazing stat.
I love that. I did not know that.
Well, because usually that might say, well, you've got a lead at the half. You're a team that really runs the ball exceptionally well and churns up the clock and closes out a win. And I don't think, when I look at the O'Brien tenure, there have been little pockets of time when they have run the ball well, but they've not really been a running team. They haven't had an Ezekiel Elliott in their backfield.
No.
They haven't been a pound the rock type of team, and yet they have that kind of a record. It's very impressive. It stands out quite a bit.
It is impressive, and the good news, if you're a Houston fan, is that this is sort of a Cinderella story. I mean, you start out at 0-3, hit five straight, and some really great complimentary football wins against Miami and Jacksonville.
Yep.
And the best news yet, they're nowhere near they need to be where they need to be.
Well,
and the players
they haven't really put it all together.
No, but they're getting there.
Particularly, I think this defense still has a lot of upside.
It does. And it's, you know, credit them. It's only October. You don't want to peak now. But you do want to be on the improving end of things. And Deshaun Watson's health is improving. I don't think he's going to have to take a bus to Denver. That would be a positive.
Yep.
But it is going to be a little tricky, that altitude, for sure.
All right, when we come back, there's one other headline. The Dallas Cowboys have fired their offensive line coach. Paul Alexander is out. We'll unpack that when we return on the Boston The Gloss of SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Well, it just seems like we've been talking all about these people are losing their jobs. You got Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley in Cleveland fired today. Jameis Winston lost his job in Dallas. There's a little bit of restlessness there. They think they're a better team than they've shown thus far. They went out and got Amari Cooper. Today, they let go of their offensive line coach, Paul Alexander, who has a long history in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. He really does.
Somewhat of a good track record. He was the offensive line coach for the Bengals when the Cowboys offensive line coach, Frank Pollock, left them this year. He went to Cincinnati, and so Alexander came to Dallas, and that was almost a trading places deal. And thus far, it looks like, well, maybe the Bengals won out on that trade. Cowboys firing Alexander today. A lot of the narrative was that the technique that he was coaching wasn't a good fit for the talent on that field.
So they do have a stacked talent at the O-line. There are some injuries.
Yeah, well, Travis Frederick, the center, is the big injury. But credit Joe Looney. He stepped in and played the center position, and most would say he's played pretty well. What he probably doesn't do as well is call the plays, orchestrate the line, mm-hmm. be the quarterback of the O-line.
Be the field general.
He's not the – I mean, Joe Looney is not the field general that Travis Frederick is. But Looney has talent. Looney has played well. And then the rest of the All-Pros are all there. Zach Martin and Tyrone Smith, and you got Lionel Collins. And they've been high on Connor Williams at left guard. So I think maybe this is a healthy change. They're going to put Mark Colombo in there. He's a longstanding Cowboy. They're bringing back Hudson Hoke as a consultant. Maybe this is the shock jolt that the offensive line needs for the Dallas Cowboys.
Maybe Colombo will solve the mystery in Dallas.
Well said.
Dot, dot, dot.
As usual, I give you the last word. The Boston The Gloss, ESPN Nation Radio.